Introduce yourself, please.
I am Representative Linda Gallagher, representing the 23rd District in the Kansas House of Representatives. I live in Lenexa, and the district includes parts of Shawnee, Lenexa, and Overland Park.
Great to have you here. Roll the open.
This is State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go.
Joining Linda and myself today are Bruce Smith from Leawood. I love your drugstore. Oh, wait a minute. Wrong Bruce Smith?
Wrong Bruce Smith.
And my colleague from KCUR, CJ Janovy, who covers arts for us. Lots to cover this week in the legislature. Frankly, though, it's a lot more fun for me to get to know Linda. So the two things that I think everybody wants to know, tell me about your kids and your pets and how you got hooked on politics.
I have two daughters in their 20s. My oldest daughter, Lori, graduated from KU. And she's currently looking to go back to school to get an elementary ed degree on top of her journalism degree. And my daughter, Katie, is studying industrial engineering at the University of Arkansas and will be graduating this May.
Wow. Pets?
We have a dog and a cat. Aphrodite is our dog. She's a Vizsla mix. And a Russian blue cat named Smokey.
And how did you get when did you realize that you were a political animal?
I grew up in a family where public policy was discussed around the dinner table. My father was very involved in the Kansas Association for School Boards, the Kansas Livestock Association, and did lobbying for them. And then he was elected to the House of Representatives 40 years ago when I was a senior in high school. And my brother also is currently in the House of Representatives in Kansas, and so I enjoy being there with him. So it's just sort of in my blood, and I've always stayed on top of the issues and never thought I would be in the House myself, but here I am.
Wow, a family business. I like it. Bruce, you know, you came through us through our Public Insight Network, Tell KC. Later on, I do want to talk to you about the revenue estimate that came in on Friday, mm-hmm. About some school funding issues that are coming up, and I'll push that back a little bit. And I want to hear first, Bruce, what's on your mind? You're sitting here next to a member of the Kansas legislature. This is a historic session, a lot of stuff to do. So what is it that she needs to know from you? What does she need to take back to her colleagues in Topeka?
Yeah, what I've found, and actually I read bills, which is an interesting thing to do anymore, because what I've found is that the bills are, how they're crafted, seems to be very arcane and maybe very non-transparent.
Yeah, Linda, you're a freshman, so I don't know. Are you having some of the same issues? I mean, they are not written in plain language.
Well, first of all, I feel like I'm drinking from a fire hose, which is what everybody warned me it would be like in the legislature, and that seems to be the case. First of all, to answer Bruce's question, there is a revisor's office in the legislature where bills are drafted, and there's a team of attorneys there who take that idea and craft it into a bill. All the bills are posted on the website, the kslegislature.org, I believe, and there should be with every bill a summary that describes in layman's terms what the bill is all about.
Yeah. CJ, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm thinking that they should have English majors in the revisor's office rather than attorneys.
Would it kill them to just like hire one?
Yeah, I've read a lot of those bills too, and it's frustrating because it seems almost like an effort to make it confusing for average citizen to understand what's going on. And a summary is great, but the devil's in details, you know. And so there are it must be hard to legislate when you're trying to pay attention to all of the implications of a particular sentence in a very long bill.
One of the things that I noticed is in at least a couple of the bills that I was looking at that your committee is trying to deal with is it starts out with, okay, we need to do this. And a lot of the things that I saw in there, I thought, well, that's great. You know, it's a good idea. But then almost immediately you go into the meat of, well, here's how we make sure people do it. And there's about 10 or 20 bureaucratic things that are required from, say, the hospital or from the school mm-hmm. or somebody has to
fill
out.
Are you referring to a specific bill?
Oh, yeah. There's a couple of them.
Yeah, which one? Let's talk
well,
about that.
Well, I guess the first one was I looked at, and I'm a little bit familiar with this. I have a relative who worked in a behavioral disorder school setting, and this is about restraint of students. It seemed like it was really focused on bureaucracy. Oh, here's your reporting requirements. And my God, this relative told me that there's already, 10,000 reporting requirements. So my guess is somebody had a bad experience, and now they're going to write a bill, and you're going to end up with 20 bureaucratic forms that you have to fill out to meet that requirement.
Yeah. Lynn, is that how it happens? I mean, it feels like it's a very personal way to legislate, right? That this is just mm-hmm. somebody had a bad experience. But is that how it happens?
Sometimes it is, yeah. Another example it is a bill before the Children and Seniors Committee that I serve on. I believe it's called the CARE Act, and it has to do with how hospitals give treatment instructions to a patient, usually an elderly patient, when they are discharged from the hospital. And it has to do with specifying the instructions given to whoever will be the caregiver for that person at home. And it's, again, I think, like Bruce said, I think it came out of some people who may have had a bad experience. The hospitals say they are already doing these things. Maybe there just needs to be improved communication and a set of protocols to follow, for hospitals to follow. I'm not sure we need another law.
I read the bill too, and it's a good idea. I'm just putting myself in there. I had a knee surgery, and my wife came and picked me up, and she was going to be my caregiver. And this bill says, well, the hospital has to ask the patient who's going to be their designated lay caregiver. And I'm thinking my wife would go, what is this all about? It's another, we social engineered HIPAA. And then now because we've got HIPAA, does my wife have to carry around a power of attorney or a marriage certificate that says that she can make those kind of decisions if I'm not conscious? That's what she asked me.
HIPAA does get in the way in this case.
HIPAA gets in the way of your relationship with your wife?
Well, the bill said
that's an unintended consequence, right?
Well,
there.
Yeah, if I came in unconscious, then it says that my guardian has to designate a lay caregiver. And she said, well, how do they know I'm your wife? Do I have to carry around documentation saying that I'm your legal guardian? And it just seemed to me like it was poorly set up and not really in tune with the way things happen in the real world.
So in a bill like this where some legislator is proposing this, the bill is drafted, you start hearing from the stakeholders, the interested parties. So in your experience so far, which is this is your first session.
3 weeks.
Yeah. Three weeks.
Right. So do you feel like you're hearing enough from the various people who are affected by a particular piece of legislation from your perspective early on? Is the citizenry sufficiently engaged to make sure that dumb stuff doesn't happen?
Well, so far, we've heard from the proponents of that particular bill in the Children and Seniors Committee. I believe this next week we will be hearing from the other side, the hospitals. On any given bill, the committees are very good about bringing in people from all sides of an issue to testify.
But that bill really hasn't been pushed through the filter of controversial legislation. I mean, committee chairs can stack a hearing in whatever direction they want to go. So far, you haven't experienced that, but clearly that's going to happen sometime during this legislative session. Because this is a very difficult session. Just on Friday, we're taping on a Saturday. Just yesterday, state came out and said that they were $47 million light in revenue collection in January. There's already a $279 million deficit that they have to fill for this current fiscal year, which ends in July. So I want to go around the table, and I want to start with you, Linda, and say, you know, you're sitting in your state house office. You're a moderate Republican freshman. And all of a sudden, this information comes across your desk, and what do you do with it? What do you think?
Month after month, we are spending more than we're taking in, and it is directly attributable to the income tax cuts put into effect in 2012, and we just can't keep going down this path. I would not have voted to put those tax cuts into effect, and we're seeing that it is creating a very, very big financial mess for the state to deal with.
I want to move around the table just real quick, but first I want to ask you, are you getting any pressure from Republican leadership about where you're supposed to go with this? Are you getting sufficient information from leadership so that you can make decisions?
Well, it's still relatively early in the process. We are just this next week, I believe, going to start acting on budget bills, starting off with the rescission bill, which we will be, I believe, we'll be voting on this week. The House Appropriations Committee is currently working on it, and that bill is to address the $280 million financial shortfall for this 2015 fiscal year.
Bruce, if you're a guy who reads bills, hell, you probably read the actual spreadsheet. So you know about this $47 million problem they had in January. What's your thought about that?
Well, yes, I'm an engineer. I'm a spreadsheet guy. but the way I approach it is, I'm definitely a fiscal conservative. I do not think that in any way, shape, or form, the state ought to be spending more than it's taking in. On the other hand,
which, by the way, you can't constitutionally
you've got to
balance the budget in Kansas.
Now, the question is not whether we meet the Constitution or not. The question is, how do we get there? And I think, you know, liberal would point out, well, we need more government, and the conservative is going to say, well, we need to cut government. And I think somewhere in the middle is where we ought to be.
Right, right. CJ, how are we doing in covering this, do you think? Because what I'm hearing Linda and Bruce say kind of the same thing. I mean, Bruce is clearly a little bit more conservative, but he wants to let the legislative process play out. You're not completely anti-government, right?
Government has a wonderful function. I have four kids that went through Kansas schools, and two that graduated from KU.
Are you seeing the same thing here? Are you seeing some agreement between Bruce and Linda?
Excuse me. What's heartening to see is you know, they're both nodding their heads as the other one is talking. You know, so clearly people who may be on different points on the Republican spectrum are hearing and agreeing with certain things that the other one is saying, and that's. That's really nice to see. The big question that I have as I sort of watch this Kansas budget situation play out now over the course of several years is for the sort of most fiscally conservative Republicans in the Kansas legislature, what's the sort of baseline amount of state government services? What's the sort of, you know, bottom line of things that the government should be providing to the citizens of Kansas, various public services, you know, public safety, the amount of public services that absolutely have to be maintained at whatever level, and for the really fiscally conservative folks in the legislature, what is that baseline? And Linda, and from where you're sitting, is there agreement in the legislature about what that bottom line is? We can't give up any more state troopers. We can't close any more schools. We can't shut down any more highways. Is there a clear sense of that?
No, I think there's a big difference of opinion within the legislature on, you know, what the core functions of government should be and what the levels of those should be. I haven't heard anybody talk about, you know, a bottom line regarding schools or roads or anything. But what concerns me is I don't think we need, you know, government that is too big, but we need government that meets its constitutional mandate to provide essential services such as education, such as social services, transportation, public safety, as you mentioned. And there are those in the legislature who just want to seek more efficiencies, as they call it. To me, efficiency, seeking those efficiencies, is a euphemism for cutting the budget. And during the recession, everything was cut tremendously because they had to, we had to. And those new levels that the budget was cut to became the new normal. Well, now people want to cut even further beyond what that new normal was, rather than getting back to where we were before the recession. And as a consequence, Kansas is falling behind other states.
And I want to move on real quick to, and you open the door to school funding coming up this week. There's a bill, Senate Bill 71, and it's very complicated, but it essentially would cut state aid with something called local option budgets for school districts. Suffice it to say that Johnson County school districts stand to lose $11 million in the current fiscal year. Shawnee Mission, about $4 million. Blue Valley, about $3 million. Olathe, $2.5 million. So this is money they would have to find in their budget before July. This seems, Linda, to be flying in the face of what we heard at the very beginning before the session started, that that Kansas schools were going to be held harmless in this mm-hmm. fiscal year. So, you know, what are we to think about that? Are we is it really that much worse than we were told, or is this not a serious proposition?
Senate Bill 71 is it's absolutely shocking in the amount of cuts it's looking to make in the current fiscal year budgets for schools, and frankly, I don't know how they would be able to do it. My email inbox and everyone in the legislature has been received. We've been inundated with emails from parents in the Shawnee Mission School District over the last 2 days, all of them saying, please stop Senate Bill 71. And As a moderate Republican, it is encouraging me to finally see people standing up, taking notice of what is happening, and contacting their legislators. Many of those emails say the people say they have never ever written to their legislators before, and they just can't sit still and take this now. And we shouldn't balance our budget on the backs of the school children of Kansas.
Yeah. Bruce, you've had kids go through those Johnson County school districts. You're a fiscal conservative. Do you think there's some fat in those school district budgets? Or is this maybe a bridge too far, cutting current fiscal year budgets?
I haven't looked at the Senate bill. However, what I hear quite often is that per pupil funding is somewhere in the neighborhood of about $12,900 or something like that. It varies, but from year to year. But for $12,000, I can send my kids to a really nice private school.
Right. Well, $12,000, of course, includes state aid, local aid, federal aid. So that's the that's not just state money. That's
sure.
the total. But it is
sure.
but it is a fair bit of money, and it makes you wonder. You know, that seems like a fair amount of money to educate your kids.
I grew up in Kansas City, moved to California, was there for 25 years. Kids almost all grew up there, but then we moved back here, and we selected the location of our house because of Shawnee Mission East. Yep. And obviously, I don't want to change the quality of that school. On the other hand, you know, perhaps there's too many administrators. Perhaps there's too many requirements, bureaucratic requirements, that they have to have this and they have to have that. Now, many of those are federal. You can't do anything about that. But the state probably has some requirements, too. I think the legislature needs to look at that and say, how much of this is required and how much do we really need in the way of whatever bureaucracy that the schools have to fund. I'm not thinking that the schools have a lot of principals and vice principals and specialists and so forth because they want it. They have it because the state requires it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do we know what the average per pupil spending is in comparable states?
Excuse me. I have seen figures that states in the Midwest, similar to Kansas, have restored education funding since the recession, like I was talking about before, whereas Kansas has not. And studies have shown that if you increase spending on schools, it does have a positive effect on test scores.
All right, I want to play a clip of tape for you, get your reaction to something to me just seemed to come out of nowhere on the House floor last week.
Members of the Kansas House have voted to amend their rules so they won't work into the early hours of the morning, passing legislation. The rules say they can't work past midnight, which often happens at the end of the session. Several lawmakers said the late nights can lead to bad decisions. Republican representative and retired doctor Barbara Bollier says studies show lack of sleep has an effect.
You are impaired to the equivalent of being drunk. We do not allow alcohol on this floor for a reason, because our decision-making is supposed to be effective.
All right, a couple of things there. Maybe alcohol on the floor near the end of the session may not be such a bad idea. But, you know, I have to say, I listen to this, and it feels to me like this is just a distraction, right? I mean, is this really something that is serious and something that you guys should be worrying about? I ask you, Representative Gallagher.
Absolutely it is. That discussion came about in the context of voting on our House rules, which we did this past week. Those were my first official votes in the House, and one of those amendments was to not allow the House to do any official business between midnight and 8 a.m., and I voted for that amendment, and it did pass. Last year, in the waning days of the session, when they were working on the school funding bill that was required by the first part of the Gannon school decision, the legislature was kept there overnight, and they would gavel in for a short time and then gavel out and then come back 2 hours later. And it was all political games. And they were, you know, at times voting on things at 3 a.m. And, you know, there's an old saying that nothing good happens after midnight. And
I think that's what they're calling this bill now, aren't they? I believe that's what they're calling this bill.
And, you know, certainly that is not the way to craft good public policy. And, you know, it can wait until the next day.
Oh, I totally agree. We require that pilots and truck drivers and maybe even engineers not engineer or do their thing when they are without sleep. And since Linda's responsibilities are for a whole state, I really concur that I've seen a lot of bad legislation that happened in the dark.
It also makes it hard for the people to participate when laws are getting made in the middle of the night.
All right. I'm in.
Correct.
Now. I like it. You've converted me. I think CJ and I are going to go with no journalism after midnight. I think that's probably the safest thing to do. All right. We have to leave it there. Representative Linda Gallagher, thank you very much. Bruce Smith, thank you.
Enjoy.
My KCUR colleague, CJ Janovy, thank you. In our effort to get to know you just a little bit better, we are going to go out of the program on your favorite song. What is it?
I would say Blue Sky from the Allman Brothers, and I'm hoping for blue skies in the future for Kansas.
Great idea. You can hear us every Tuesday on Up to Date with my friend Steve Kraske anytime on KCUR.org. Search for State House Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. See you next time.